Mr. Macmillan, reel 16. How long were you on the beach?
To the best of my ability, were in this little house on the top of the cliff. Well, we'll think about a week, and then they fetched us back to England again. That was it.
Did you see or make contact with any French people?
No, we made contact with some German people actually. I think they were, I suppose they were captured, but they seemed to me to be just walking around. No, we didn't meet any French people at all. Because by the end of a week, you must realise the Navy's job is finished. Because with the army advancing, the need for bombardment gets less and less and less. So after the bombardment gets out of the range of a battleship or a cruiser, the army are to rely on the Air Force then. So the Navy, there wasn't much need for big ships. There were a lot of little ships left, and that was in case of any submarine attack from the Germans, which they did carry out during the landings. Not a lot, but there was a few. So there was a few destroyers left.
Were you attacked by German aircraft at any time in that first week?
We were attacked and they flew over us, but I do not remember any bombs or any gunfire. Not directed towards us. I think they've been making for bigger targets. And once we landed, I can't remember any gunfire. It must have been there, but I can't remember it.
You must have had a superb view of the beach.
Oh, yes. We were, what I would think, the house that we set up the sixth signal station in would be about 20 feet, which we'll see nowadays is 6 metres above the beach. From the Navy's point of view, I'm assuming there seemed to be no excitement. It seemed dull compared to previous expeditions we're on. And that was just the same monotonous job every day. Call up so-and-so, tell him to go off. Actually, we just used to sometimes sit with our binoculars watching them push burnt out tanks away and getting lorries away and that. No excitement at all.
Were they bringing wounded back down to the beach to take them off?
They were bringing them down because I think the LCTs were ideal for bringing wounded because they could get the ramp right down and they could carry them straight on the stair. The LCAs, I don't think, they were used, but not. The LCTs or LSIs would be ideal for that. But we didn't know whether they were wounded or whether they were dead. We're hoping they were only wounded. And then it was a case of getting the... when the LCTs had discharged their cargo, they were no good to them. So they were sent back for more supplies, I'm assuming. And that was our part in D-Day. Nothing spectacular. I would like to hear a soldier's point of view. Now, that would be worth listening to. But from the naval point of view, very quiet, very quiet.
And you returned to England, you say, after a week. What happened to you then?
We went back to a base in Dundonald in Scotland. I think we just waited and then slowly but surely different persons disappeared and others arrived into a unit. And then we were getting, the next thing we knew were getting briefed to go down, I think it was to the Clyde, to join a troop ship for the Far East.
What date would this be?
It's upstairs in my diary. I would have to get a diary. I can't remember.
D-Day was the 6th of June, so you'd...
If you take that off... we come to Wednesday from Dundonald until the 17th of January.
1945.
I had 4 days leave. Took the wife and baby home to Newcastle.
So you got married. How long had you been married?
June 1943. So that would be a year and a half, wouldn't it? Getting geared ready for sailing. Thursday the 18th, started on trucks, took jeep to Glasgow with Jack. Jack, who the hell Jack is? Friday, still on trucks. Pistols issue today. Very cold wind. Won't be long now. Saturday the 19th, went home last time. Right. Sunday the 20th, passed the docks for the last time in Dundonald. Packed everything for leaving AM tomorrow. Started out at 0600 for Greenock. Arrived 10:30 and embarked on HM Transport Orion at 4:30. First meal at 6:30, kippers.
How did you feel about going to the Far East, leaving your family?
Not very nice, actually. But we knew that would be the next theatre that we would get to. So we just took it for granted that that was it. Orders are orders, and that...
What were the conditions like on the troop ship?
Just normal. We had boat drill. We had concert. A saxophone, two guitars, and a banjo. That was it.
Was it crowded?
Not from the naval point of view. We had a mess of our own, 132 mess.
Were you back to Royal Navy now, or are we still in with combined services?
No, we're still in with the combined operations.
Combined operations.
Yes. That I was in combined operations right through to the end of my service after that.
What was the route you followed? Did you go through the canal?
Well, I'm just, these little things, nothing happened yet, still waiting to sail, still waiting, leaving tomorrow. That was Saturday, Sunday church in the morning, sailed at 6:10, being the Commodore.
What date was that, the actual date?
Wednesday the 23rd, 27th, Monday. Sea not bad. Monday, sea very rough. Most of the lads seasick. Here we are. Through the Med to Port Said. 2 days there. Down through the Suez Canal, 12 hours. Port Tufik, that's at the southern end. 2 days there. 1 day at Aden. No, this not a bad trip. Food and living conditions very bad, and no enjoyment except cards. Changed to tropical rig at Aden. Had route march in Port Said. Commodore was Rear Admiral Bonham Carter. No cruiser. Arrived Bombay on Friday the 23rd of February. Not much of a place. Saturday the 24th, arrived HMS Braganza. That was the name of the naval base in Bombay. Met some old friends, food very good, and nothing to do. Nothing to do with routine. Nothing happened here, but I wrote to Lily, my wife.
Arriving in Bombay, what was it like? What were your first impressions?
First impressions, it was rather a dirty city. The people seemed dirty. That was probably with the clothes they wore. And we couldn't get out of this idea of what we were told, whatever you do, don't harm the cows. They're sacred in India. If you knock a lamppost down, but don't knock a cow down. Plenty of food, especially fruit. We're only there about 3 or 4 days to get, and then we're off on a 10-day trip across the other side of India to Vizagapatam. And from there we...
Is that by train?
No, by what, two jeeps. Vizagapatam, well, there was nothing there actually when we got there. But that was going to be our base for where, after that, after various little bits and pieces, we went and done a few little probing runs over Burma and these places. And
what do you mean, probing runs?
Just what they would call these days commando raids. We got attached for a while out there to the Gurkhas. And then from there we went and we got attached to the 42nd and 44th Royal Marine Commando. We were the communication ratings.
And these were raids from the sea?
Yes.
And again, what boats were you using?
LCAs. Small, easy up the beach, easy to get back off again.
Any opposition that you met?
No, I never seen a Japanese in all my life. Never seen one.
And these landings, these raids, were not opposed. You weren't opposed by the enemy. They weren't firing at you.
No. No, I don't remember one shot being fired back in anger. We went up to... I can't remember the name of these little places now. It was just a case of what they'd done, you know, to keep the enemy on the toes, as they told us. You know, Ramri, Akiab... These were the little places we eventually...
And were there definite objectives for these raids, or did you say...
I do not know, but we were never told that was solely left to the Royal Marine Commanders. They would be briefed. All we were told was, we were communication, keep in touch with a destroyer or whatever it is, if we wanted covering fire. But other than that, everything was left to the Royal Marines.
So you went with the Marines on the land?
With the Marines as communication ratings, that was all.
And you can't recall any actions or
danger spots? No, I can't. What the Royal Marines got up to when they landed, I don't know until this day. But they all come back safely every time. So.
What were the Gurkhas like? You said you were the Gurkhas first.
Great little chaps. Marvellous. Do anything under the sun for you. Anything under the sun. Yes, they were marvellous little fighters. Didn't say much, but if you asked anything, it was always yes, sir. And they were away and do it. Nothing was too great for them to do. We should never, ever disband the Gurkhas. Never. Because I think they're one of the finest fighting forces in the world. I mean, they were smaller than me, and I was only 5'4". But they were great little chaps. Great little chaps, yes. I actually seen, it's been told, but I've actually seen it, about drawing the cougars and making blood. Now, I don't believe that. But I actually seen one day take his cougary and slice a complete end off a tin of corned beef, right through it, and he just tipped the corned beef out. Well, we would have got a tin opener. One of the big tins I'm talking about. But they were tip-top soldiers. Immaculate clothes, hygiene and everything. Really, I believe to this, I don't know today. In those days, I believe that they were the only regiment allowed in a British canteen. Indian soldiers and all that, I don't think were, but the Gurkhas were always allowed in British canteens. Not that they ever, they seemed to keep to themselves. Because they were speaking a language that I suppose only a few officers could understand. But they understood English, definitely, but they would speak in their own language, which was quite the proper thing to do.
And they were commanded by British officers.
They were commanded by British officers, yes. And they thought the world of the British officers. Oh, yes. As I say, they would do anything under the sun for you.
And the Royal Marine Commandos, they were pretty high elite.
They were the top dogs in those days. They were the top dogs. Now, I must admit, they were a rough lot. Real, I'm sure half of them were come out of prisons, etc. But we got on well with them. They never gave us any problems. They went and done their job, come back, never spoke about it, and that was it. I don't think they speak about it much today either. They go and do it, do the job, finish, come home, that's it. And they were the same then. But they were real rough, tough gentlemen.
After these raids, where did you go?
We come back. When did they want to be called? I think we come back in India somewhere, joined a troop ship. The memory gets a bit faded here. And I think the original idea when we set out was to capture the island of Penang. But before we got there, or a couple of days after we got there with the commandos, they had dropped the atomic bomb. And no, couldn't have been right, because we finished up in Sabang. Is that Indonesia? We finished up there, and that's where, when we got in, I got attached to a Royal Indian Naval minesweeper. How I got there, I don't know until this day. And when we get in there, that's when I told you that I met Commander Onslow again, when I went over to see him in Sabang Harbour. And then he went off and done his raids in various places with his destroyer flotilla. And that was it. It finished.
And the war ended there.
Peace was declared. I think we landed at Port Swettenham. That's in the island of Penang. And I still didn't see a Japanese. So as regards seeing the enemy, the nearest I got to the enemy was the old trawler that we captured up in Norway in 1941. Of course, the Navy didn't see a lot of a land enemy. And you didn't see a lot of a sea enemy, because you could probably, the bigger ships could probably fight each other without seeing each other. So that's where hostilities ceased for me.
And what happened to you then?
I come home to England and was discharged.
You decided to come out the Navy.
When my time was up.
How many years had you done that?
Well, I had signed for 7. And 5 were on the reserve. But I'd actually done 8. And then after that, I went, after coming home and discharged, etc.
How were you discharged? What was the process?
Come home, went on some leave. Went somewhere in Scotland. I do not remember where it was. And there's a suit, and there's a hat, and there's a shirt, and there's a tie. None of them fitted, like. My dad got me trilby. We managed to get some clothing coupons and get something decent. And then after that, it was just a case of once a year for a fortnight being called up down to Chatham Barracks for a little bit training. Because by then, we had adopted the United States Naval codes and flags and signals. I think the idea there was scrap our code books, let the United States bring theirs in, and it would save us the trouble of printing them all. They would come straight over. But they were not quite as efficient as our signal department, I must say. Nor were the sailors. Oh, no, definitely not. So that was it. That's my war ended.
What's the outstanding memory of your service with the Navy?
The convoys to Russia and the one convoy to Malta. That was pedestal. Other than that, everything was like a routine. That would be my outstanding memories.
And now you're involved with the old comrade associations and the motor associations, you say?
Yes, I'm a member of the Russian Convoy Club, which we meet in South Shields every third Wednesday of the month. And the George Cross Island Association in Newcastle, which we meet every second Friday in the month. I'm on the committee, so we sometimes meet more with the gentleman you have already spoken to, Mr. Jewett and Mr. Innes. They are also committee members. We meet unofficially when we want a day out and have a lunch. And occasionally I go to the RNA Association in Sunderland, which Mr. Innes is quite a well-known member. Not very often, because the buses don't run reasonably well for me here. That was it. Mm.